Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know, from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned you. Better watch out.
Broadcasting from a radioactive bunker deep inside the Bracket compound, this is Real Spoilers, episode 746.
A true milestone.
A true milestone. Wow, I don't usually read off the numbers or the titles, and so like that number, when you say it out loud, it's really big.
It's a big number.
I don't want to leave our guests hanging. If you're watching this, you see that Tom is not here. He's gallivanting, he's protesting Disney World, something about DeSantis rally or something that he's, I don't know why he's down there, something like that. But we're joined by a special guest today. You know him, you love him, you've seen him before. Darren Lumberg, how are you, sir?
I am good. How are you guys?
We're good, great.
Buddy. Good, buddy.
You need your resident old man, I guess.
Yeah, right? Oh, Tom's gone. Let's see who we can find. Oh,
we gotta bring the average age up.
Who's going to be up at 4 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah. Reading the paper, eating your, the Benefiber?
Oh, yeah, something like that.
What was the, man, they were so gross. But my grandparents used to have them all the time, and they were just
Monster
like curds.
Squad. No, oh, sorry.
They were just gross. Monster Squad.
That sounded right.
It was like the most, it was like porridge. It was like thick, gross porridge that they would eat.
Ugh. Lovely. Well,
old people food.
Before we get into that, let's get into a heaping help of shameless plugs, all right? I'm going to try to do the best I can. I may or may not have just quickly assembled these lists. So if you don't hear from us, yell at us like Ralph Tribble did. Yes, hi, Ralph Tribble. We saw you. You shared Little Mermaid. We appreciate it. But if you are like Ralph and got overlooked by us, just tune in and I'll mention you again next week, or Tom will at least. So anyway, thank you for sharing the show. Invasion of the Remake, David Rojas, Spoiler Piece Theater, Jason Weesey, James Enstall from Geek to Me Radio, not going to read Tom O'Keefe's name, Dan Buffa, In Session Film, Dan and Nancy Tweet the Movies, Colby Mack, Real Spoilers. We've never read. I mean,
I guess it's the Brad Hyen rule.
Like, yeah, was Real Spoilers on the show last week? Anyway, well, which Real Spoilers? That's the question.
That's a whole different podcast.
Feelin' Film, Ryan L. Terry, Ronnie Castle, Jason from Binge Movies. I did a guest appearance on there, so go check that out if you haven't. D.W. Lumberg from Nostalgia Cast. Well, that's exciting to have your name read. See, usually that if you're on the show, you don't get your name read, but this is you worked that out on.
Circumvented the Brad Hyen rule.
Name dropping all over the place.
I like it. Mike and Oscar. Matt Neglia from Next Best Picture. Moving over to my other list here. Chris Falls, Glenn Cougar Mellon Brewer, Julianne Jordan, Chris Magican, Ralph Tribble again. Ralph Tribble. Did I say that right? Ralph Tribble. All right. We see you. Heather Sachs, Taylor Ward, Tom Dowdy, Josh Rosen, Tammy Lynn Powers-Betts, Gabriel Lugo, Ron Johnson, the Reverend Brenton Smith, Christopher Rex, Real Spoilers on Facebook, just in case that does count, and Matt Reedy. So thank you so much, everyone, for sharing the show. We greatly appreciate it. Helps our numbers get up. We charted not quite as high as Fast X. We had the Basler bump on that one, but I think we got up to 59 on the top film charts on Apple Music or Apple iTunes podcast, whatever they call that. So yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think about it, I mean, how many film podcasts have to be out there? There's got to be tens of thousands, I would
name
think,
Grill
right?
Spoilers. I bet you there might be.
Well, there might be a few of those, but
I think there's even a nostalgic cast. I think
a nostalgic
oh, really?
Cast?
Oh,
yeah,
my
like, oh.
Gosh.
All right.
You just can't
you
win.
You bastards.
Nope.
But anyway, thank you again for sharing the show. Also, leave us a review. That helps the show as well. Rate and review us on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. They usually let you rate us. I don't think we have any new ones this week, but
nope.
A little birdie told me that someone named Darren may be leaving a review soon. So that's
ooh.
Exciting. So yeah. You know what? He won't get his name read if he shares the show next week, but if he writes a review,
it will get read.
This is the only time you can circumvent the Brad Hyen rule is to write a review. So you have one shot to do this, Darren.
Okay. I will write that down on a calendar to make sure.
No pressure.
Thanks for guilting me into that. I appreciate
put it into your day planner. And if you don't see a review from Darren, make sure to tweet at him. And
please.
He does have a very active Twitter account. That's really funny.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Hey, this isn't the plugs. This is our plugs.
Oh, sorry. His plugs are later.
Right. Also, one of the other things, we've got a Patreon where we're doing, usually it's a horror movie Patreon. I don't know why or how that happened, but this
nobody was paying attention to it.
Yeah. Yeah. No one was
paying
attention. And
then I took it over.
And it got turned into a horror movie. But we've had some expenses lately that were unforeseen,
we
haven't gotten into them yet. We may do that at some point. But let's just say that your contributions, supporting the show, not just equipment and hosting, and all that stuff, but other fees come up out of nowhere sometimes, and they came in very much handy the past month.
Yes.
So thank you guys so much. If you haven't signed up for the Patreon, there's tons of bonus stuff on there. We're doing MCU the phase one that we never covered on the show before, so it's a great chance to get in for that, all the old stuff. And seriously, when we say we can't do the show without your support, like, it means the world to us. So thank you so much. If you can throw $5 at us a month, it really does help. The other thing is YouTube. We're almost at 300 subscribers. If you haven't, just pop over there on YouTube. If you can click the subscribe button, it really does help get those episodes seen. It's a lot more work that goes into editing videos. So I'm just going to say, I mean, it's fun to do. We love to do it. But since we are spending the extra time, the extra editing software and all that stuff, we'd love to have people watching the videos over there. So just pop over, hit the bell, or don't, whatever. Like, if you don't want to hear from us, mute us, but hit that subscribe button, and that will help us out with the algorithms over there. And I think that's it. Anything else I need to plug, Joe?
No, I think you're good.
All right, well, let's get into the movie, guys. Transformers Beast Wars.
Man,
growing up, what's your experience with Transformers, Joe?
Oh, I mean, they were it, right? Like, when I was a kid, it was Thundercats, He-Man, G.I. Joe.
Oh, G.I. Joe. Heard of them.
Yeah. Transformers and superheroes and wrestling, right? Like, those were the big things.
Did the wrestlers fight the Transformers and the G.I. Joes? And
I had those massive, like, LJN hard rubber 80s action figures. And you could, I mean, kids today don't understand that we could kill each other with our toys. Like,
we didn't need an old man guest.
No.
Joe just started off with kids today.
Like, the Transformers that I had were like legit metal.
Oh, they weren't
plastic. Megatron was a gun. That you could turn him into a gun.
Optimus Prime was this huge. There was a gigantic one. I had this. I had,
yeah.
I mean, maybe gigantic's an overstatement, but as a kid, it seemed huge. You could actually transform the trailer into a robot, or it would turn into the tractor trailer. And then you would add the big rectangle, like the actual trailer, onto it, and you could roll them around and everything. And I'll tell you what, all those Transformers, my Ninja Turtles,
whatever else,
all gone at garage sales for $1 or $2. I kick myself every. Who would have known, right?
Right. Me.
You have them all? You have all your toys?
No, I've gone back and rebought them, though.
Oh, well, that's that does not count.
You can't see it from this point of view because I'm afraid to show it. Like, but if I turn my camera around, It is messed out.
I was going to say, don't pan down. I don't know what you're talking about over
pants.
There.
I got shorts on.
You got shorts? Okay. I got shorts this time. this time. Darren, how about you? Did you watch the shows? Did you play with the toys? Or what was that like?
Growing up, I think I mentioned this to you guys somewhere before, but I'm an only kid. And so my mom, just to try to make sure, and a single parent. So I didn't have a dad around. So it was my mom trying to make sure I had all the stuff that boys were supposed to have. So my three obsessions growing up that she made sure I had: Godzilla, I had James Bond, and I had Transformers. So those are my three things that I really concentrated on.
That's
so
wonderful.
I've known, she used to go off on Tupperware parties, and every time it was a tradition, she'd buy me like a Transformer or a GoBot or something and bring it back for me.
GoBots.
So, I've been in love with these things forever. We even did, like, for Nostalgia Cast, we did a Transformers the movie episode.
Oh, I love that movie.
I brought on my son, and we talked about the movie. We talked about, like, how I passed on my love of the toys to him.
That was the first, like, bootleg VHS I ever bought. Was the director's cut of Transformers
the
movie.
Words?
Yes. Yeah.
And you know what? When it comes to me, not to step on Darren's toes here, but I loved that movie, and I rented it from the video store on VHS, and then I wanted to get a copy of DVD. Well, that DVD went out of print. Now,
it did.
As you may know, it's on Steelbook 4K, regular 4K. DVDs are at Target for $5. Like, I kid you.
Shout Factory, right?
Shout Factory did the newer one, but they've been re-released since. But at the time when I was a kid, like, let's say, I don't know if I was 10 or 12 or whatever, but I wanted that movie. I'm like, in DVD, it will look great. And it was out of print. And so for Christmas, my mom went on eBay and, like, bought the, $40, $50 out of print DVD for me.
Because payment didn't exist yet.
But she knew how much I loved that movie, and I had only seen it on VHS. So, and then, of course, after she went through all the trouble, a few years later, they're like, oh, yeah, let's just release this everywhere. It's in the $5 Walmart bin or whatever. But I'll never forget that, though, that, like, I wanted nothing more DVD wise than that movie. And it was a really special movie to me, just because, like, when I grew up, I had all those toys, I watched the show. And then the question I wanted to lead into for you guys was, then, so I grew up with the 1984 Transformers, G1 as it's called. When Beast Wars came out, I just could not get into that animation. I just could not do it. That proto CG.
It's real bad.
I watched Reboot, and the only thing I can think of, same studio, but the only thing I can think of is Reboot took place in a computer game, right? So, like, when you think of a video game, it doesn't look real.
Oh, sure, sure,
and the Reboot, same graphics, same CG animation. But when it came to Transformers, I guess, one, it wasn't Optimus Prime, and it wasn't Starscream and Soundwave and all that, right? So it's different characters. And two, they're supposed to be animals, or look like what are realistic looking animals. And man, I couldn't ever get into it. What about you guys?
The only reason I watched, so as a Catholic kid, we would go to church on Sundays, right? 10 a.m. mass every Sunday. Beast Wars was on at like 9 a.m. Sunday mornings. So while I was getting ready to go to church, I'm watching,
gotcha.
There's no cartoons on Sunday mornings. They know better. But Beast Wars was on every Sunday morning, and I started watching it, and it was like, this has happened to me more than once. Like, I didn't start watching Supernatural until they were at like season 4.
Mm-hmm.
Only because they played it, I think, after Smallville. Mm. And I was like, I need to watch the rest of this show forever.
Yeah.
And that's what Beast Wars did, is like, I just kept watching it. And then you get invested in, which character is going to turn on who, and somebody's actually a Decepticon. And
I was watching some videos about it, and apparently they spent all their budget on the character designs, and that's why
the
backgrounds look like a flat plane with one tree and one rock in the background, because they spent all the money on the Maximals.
Maximals.
What were the bad guys called?
The Decepticons.
The Predator.
Terracons, aren't they?
Terracons.
Right? I don't know. The movie says that. Yeah.
Yeah. So what about you? Are you more Joe or me when it comes to Beast Wars, Darren?
I could never get into it. I didn't like, first of all, the animation. It reminds me of, like, what is it, Hoodwinked or all those. I try not to remember the names of those animated, but they just look like they're still rendering. You know what I mean?
It's but
like,
you know what?
That's great.
Animatic?
I guess it's like 20 years later, so, it should look better, but, Beast Wars wish it looked like Hoodwinked. Like, Beast Wars, but it's older, so I get it. I'm not trying to diss. It's, again, Reboot I loved, and it's the same animation, but there's something so basic about it, to where, like, even the 1980s short Pixar films, like, you could see there's a style there, which is it's old and it's rudimentary, but it's there's an artistic value to it where you're like, wow, that's really, really cool. And with the Beast Wars, like you said, Darren, I mean, it makes sense. It looks like now what we would consider you're in Blender or whatever, and it's your, it's not rendered.
It's Lawnmower Man type special effects.
Yeah, yeah.
You are like, that's not how wrong. You're it looks like somebody's beginning of like a college or even high school like animation project,
right?
Like a kid who's just learning how to render and put things, you know, moving around. Yeah. You're like, I think this little block might work. That looks like a gorilla. Yeah, we'll go.
Now,
with that.
I mean,
we'll just color it gray.
But now, on the flip side of this, though, I mean, I do want to give them the props. I can't remember the name of the studio that did it, but the guys that did Reboot and Beast Wars, and then they had a third show I never watched, they were the only ones doing it. Like, this studio, this was one of the only full CG shows aside from Reboot. Like, give them their props. They paved the way for now what is every single kid's show. It's CG. Right?
Yeah.
They don't do hand-drawn. Like, Mickey Mouse Clubhouse is a CG-looking Mickey Mouse. Puppy Dog Pals or Paw Patrol.
South Park. South Park's all CG. That's not hand-drawn.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's computer. They do it by computers, but I don't know if I would call it CG.
It's not cell animation, though. It's not.
No, but
like,
it never was, though.
Right. But Transformers was cell animation.
Right. South Park is, like, faux stop animation. It's computer. But the point is, though, that they don't... kids' shows, right? We grew up with stuff like, I'll say, Darkwing Duck or Tailspin or...
Ghostbusters.
Sure, yeah. Or like, all the Beetlejuice, the cartoon. I mean, if we go back, you get all these cool cartoons. You know, and
look at, like, all of the R-rated properties that were turned into kid cartoons.
Or Transformers G1 from the late '80s. It's like they were all hand-drawn animation, and so they were pushing the boundary. They were ahead of their time, and props for them for paving the way for all these other shows. But with that being said, I just something about it. But I think the other thing too, it's not just the animation, right? So they were one of the first. They innovated. Okay, I'm glad they did it, and you know it progressed. But the other thing was too, and the showrunners admit it. The Beast Wars cartoon didn't have much anything to do with G1 Transformers because these guys never watched it. The guys that created the show and wrote for the show never watched G1 Transformers. So
my problem with the cartoon too is not just the animation, but it's like Optimus Prime is my guy, right? That's my hero. Like if you like just when I think a hero, it sounds really nerdy. Like that's the robot, I don't think that's nerdy at all. Right?
He's the linchpin.
Yeah, yeah, but like to have him, and I thought it was weird because I thought Optimus Primal was like the G1 version, but no, it's like they're the Ark or wherever where they crashed. The Transformers are there, like they've crashed on Earth, and so you have Optimus and Ironhide and all these people lying around the Ark, and somebody like they made the Maximals and they made him after, so Optimus Prime is in it, and they named him after, and I was just like, my brain just I couldn't wrap my mind around that, and it was like
that is where
Optimus Prime is not
movie.
Here. Interesting.
That's like I don't remember these movies. I remember the first one,
like the Michael Bay movies.
Yeah, I remember the first one for sure. But like when we get to, I remember Bumblebee.
Yeah.
But I can't remember if I'm supposed to know that there's a time jump or if there's a timeline shift because. This does not line up with 2007's Transformers.
I think it's a reboot. Yeah, but I think they've actually said it's a reboot of
So Bumblebee is the reboot?
Yeah, so Bumblebee, like in Bumblebee, if you remember, it's like all of a sudden Optimus shows up and he's there on Earth, but in the 2007 movie, that's the first time they've arrived on Earth.
Right.
Yeah.
And so if this one is... It's bending my brain. If this one is based in 1994 and it comes after Bumblebee, because they do mention the Haley Steinfeld character, I think they mention her. But if this is 1994 and it takes place after that, then that means that it has to be a reboot. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense that Optimus Prime and all the Autobots would
just
already
landed
be there.
Sure.
Because
yeah. No.
They landed
for sure.
I don't think you're forgetting anything. It's just
okay.
Crazy.
Good.
Crazy.
But I like that a lot because you know if you're a fan of the original Transformers, I'll say. The first one and the third one are watchable. Those are fun popcorn block, you know, check your brain, eat some popcorn movies. The second and fourth ones are just atrocious. And I cannot believe the first one was so fun. I'll never forget seeing the second one in theater and just groaning, doing the Dan Graney groan and rolling my eyes.
Right,
the racist robots and the parents that are stoned.
Well, if you can... if you can allow me something really quick.
Of course.
Like, I remember going to see Transformers in the theater, like 2007. And again, my son was of age that we decided to bring him. But
okay.
So none of our, like my wife and her family, because I'm an only kid, but like we've been getting married into her family. She has sisters, like four sisters. And so none of the wives wanted to go see it. So it was all the brothers-in-law that went to go see Transformers.
Yeah.
And it was good. I mean, you know, you look at it now, and I think Lindsay Ellis has a video series where she looks at it, and it's like, well, the Michaela, the Megan Fox character should be the lead because she's got the most connection. But Michael Bay decided to make the screechy, like, entitled Shia LaBeouf, like, whiny guy the hero because that's who audiences identify with.
Sure.
So a lot of that is really awkward. But a lot of the Transformer stuff, I remember there was a lot of, like, fewer over, oh, Optimus Prime has flames on him, right? I'm like,
oh,
okay,
but design,
like,
the design,
it's he's a Peterbilt truck, he's not like the flat nose, but anyway, so, but I thought that they got,
but
Optimus,
it's Michael
like,
Bay, Darren, yeah. It's Michael Bay, right. So he has to have flames,
he has
explosions.
Yeah. But the thing was, they got Optimus the character correct, he is a hero in that, like, he's willing to just barrel in there and take the brunt of the attacks, and so I thought that that stuff was very good, and it was a lot of fun. And then it was so good, then we talked up to the wives. So we brought the wives in for the second one, and it was just
so many
sex jokes and so many things. Like, how much money did they spend on that shot of the balls of the Devastator?
Yeah.
It's like, why? And I know there was a writer's strike, but it was so awful. And Dark of the Moon kind of redeemed that.
Dark of the Moon was fun. It was
And it had some really crazy stunts, like when they're sliding
really
down
good.
The side of that building. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's great.
Maybe we didn't cover it, but we've talked about it, I know, because we were so impressed. You know what it was? So we covered Age of Extinction, unfortunately, in 2014.
Yes.
And I think we talked about how freaking fun Dark of the Moon was, and then they went back to stupidity for the fourth one.
Well, watching Age of Extinction was like one of the... That was the movie that help me decide that I don't have to see everything because your brain kind of goes along, even the second one, like in the first thing, it goes along with it. And then just something broke. Watching Age of Extinction, my brain fought me the entire time. And it was an excruciating experience. Like, why are they doing this? What was the point of that? How did that person get here? Why is Bumblebee running around in this facility and he's making all this noise and nobody hears him? Just all this stuff. And then it has the gall to have a 3-minute scene where they stop so they can explain how it's okay for Mark Wahlberg's underage daughter to date a 21-year-old dude.
It's gross.
And they stop the Romeo and Juliet law, right? But they explain it, and the visuals and the way they're building up that Jack Rayner character, you're supposed to find this guy charming? And it's like, are you giving people an excuse to sleep with them, like
it's
to commit
so
statutory
gross.
Rape?
It, you know, it's funny you bring that up, though, is I do remember, obviously, Megan Fox in the first one has scenes where you're just like, why is she positioned? Like, what are you doing? Like, I think there's one where she's maybe tinkering under the hood of a car.
Isn't it when she's going up the stairs? It looks like Michael Bay's about to give her a pap smear.
There's like, he does that to her like, multiple
times. That's the third
times.
One where they're following the rose. I can't remember it, but they're following her up, and it was like, this isn't for kids.
That's unfortunate. Yeah, that movie's fun, but yeah, that's an unfortunate shot.
The third one that she was in,
She's like leaning over like the chassis of a car.
Yeah.
And the way she's positioned, it's like, okay, if you were taking a photo for a supermodel, this makes sense. If you're trying to tell me that she's working on a car, this makes no sense. Like, the way she is positioned on this car makes zero sense. And I just remember, you know, that was kind of his thing for a while, is he would take these starlets, because Megan Fox, she hadn't popped yet, right? Like, this is
pretty sure Transformers is one
Transformers
of the things.
Is
she
the
was
one
in Bad Boys
2
for a shot, but she was underage and they were shooting her like that.
Oh.
Yeah. That's what she watched.
Megan Fox was in
audition for
Bad Boys 2?
Yeah.
Yeah. She's just in like a quick shot from what I understand, like in a
oh dang.
You never heard that story where she had to wash his car was her audition?
Oh, I thought that was for Transformers.
I think it was for
either way. Either way, that's bad.
Gross. Gross.
Yeah.
But yeah, the way he would shoot these women, and a part of me is like, okay, you're gearing towards an audience, and there's an audience that comes to see these movies, and it's dude bros that want to see smashy smash and hot chicks, but at the same time, don't do that.
Well, and it was a different time too. Not excusing it, but that was acceptable back then, and clearly now, when you see this story being rebooted by the last film, Bumblebee, and how different it is, and you have female lead that is actually given something to do and fleshed out character arc.
And there's no leering shots of her. That's strange. No, the most leering shot in the movie is of I think the boy that she has a crush on at the beach. He's shirtless.
Interesting.
And but it's even Haley Steinfeld.
Even Megan Fox in that first. I don't want to defend those choices, but her character. That's what her character's about. Like, she makes mention, like, they just like me for my looks. But there's so much, like, and Shia LaBeouf has that, well, there's more that meets the eye. And she's good with cars and stuff like that. And she, my favorite part of that movie is when everybody's being killed and Sam is running off. And she stops because they told her to run away. And she has a moment where she, like, has she freaks out because all her friends are dying. And she charges back with Bumblebee into the fight. And I'm like, that's awesome. Like, gives her something to do. So, again, I'm not trying to defend those leering shots, but that's at least a character arc that shows you that she's worth something. And then in the second one, it goes way overboard with those. The first shot of her is her over a motorcycle, and it's like
that's
it makes
what
you
it
feel
is.
Dirty.
You're, and then she became April O'Neil.
Yeah.
Well, that's when they didn't think she would ever work with him, and then she showed back up in Mutant Turtles, and they buried the hatchet, however, whatever. But, okay, so the point is, those first movies, like, there's something to like about the first and the third, I think, the second, fourth, and then I forgot until today, there's a fifth movie about knights, remember? Knight Robots?
Yeah, I didn't see
Never watched it. Sir I watched the first 10 minutes. And
Sir Anthony Hopkins, you didn't get to see his performance in that.
Is he Omnicron?
No, he's
a human.
He's an old dude, just like he's a wacky old dude. Did you not see that movie, Joe?
No, I don't think so.
The first 10 minutes, they keep switching aspect ratios for no reason. Like,
was it
in the same scene?
Was he doing IMAX?
Like, not even just that, because you go to see The Dark Knight and it switches to the IMAX shots, right?
Which for a whole scene,
Yeah, it wows you. But like, literally, if you watch it, I tried to watch it on Amazon. It cuts between like a wide shot. Yeah, and there are like four different aspect ratios within this, from shot to shot. I'm like, what the hell is this? And I couldn't watch it.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
And Michael Bay directed that one too?
Yes, he did.
Okay.
He did.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Travis Knight comes in for Bumblebee, and that's a great movie. They're getting it around the right path. I think it makes over $500 million globally, so it's a success. I mean, it's not as big as the Michael Bay movies, but critically, it has a great reception. It still makes a ton of money.
The Transformers look like Transformers.
That's what I was going to say, right? Like, that's the one where they go back to kind of the original G1 models.
Because Michael Bay didn't think it would look realistic. He wanted it to look... But it's like... It looked great. It looked fun. It's like, it's about alien robots. Like, I don't need to have that realistic. Just show me the cartoon.
Michael Bay also has this weird obsession with aliens. I don't know if he's watching too much History Channel Ancient Aliens or what, but like, remember he made the Turtles aliens too?
Oh,
he wanted them
God.
To be teenage alien Ninja Turtles, and they changed the title because people flipped out about it, but they look weird because they're supposed to be aliens. They just slightly changed the character models from their alien look. So I don't know what the deal is. Because when we're watching a Transformers movie, you want them to look like robots. They don't need to be alien. And I know technically it's like, okay, they come from another planet. They're alien. But he has this, like, he wants them to look like almost like organic, synthetic alien creatures.
But man, remember when they would fight, you're just like, wait, who am I looking at? Like,
the second one, right? When they're in the forest. When they're in the forest and the trees and they walk in front of the camera every time they swing a fist or a sword, and you're just like, what is happening?
You can't tell them apart. It's just a mangle of metal, and it's like, I don't like my brain, that second one, more than the racist robots. Yeah. My brain was hurting because my eyes couldn't focus on
what,
and that's why like something like Mad Max Fury Road comes out and it refocuses everything. So I think the Mad Max Fury Road is just as crazy image-wise as Transformers, Revenge of the Fallen. But George Miller has the wherewithal to shoot everything in the center, so we know where to focus. And so it never gives me a headache. You know what I mean? But
Yeah.
It's just, there's all colored the same, and you don't know what's... And I don't know what... I don't know. It's
When I saw RC in this movie, and I was like, that looks great.
Yeah.
Like, she looks wonderful.
Like the cartoon, right.
Just like the cartoon, and I know who that character is, and I can identify who these people are. But yeah, those other ones, I was like, I mean, I guess that's Optimus Prime. And now I know that's Bumblebee because he's yellow.
Right.
So you get that. The Bumblebee was a really good reboot of that. Got away from the Michael Bay male gaze, the bombastic action that you can't follow. It's a really heartfelt movie. Great performance. Hailee Steinfeld, speaking of our movie last week, yep. Across the Spider-Verse, she's great in it. And so then they fast forward to this movie, and I guess Travis Knight, who is the head of Leica, I guess he wanted to get back into stuff for his own studio. So I guess he got a few bucks for Leica, you know, to fund his projects, and they decided to switch directors. And so here you have Stephen Caple Jr., who did Creed 2, I believe, which was a great movie. And all the Creed movies are really good. But I noticed right away the difference between a Michael Bay's Transformers movie and this guy, right? There's something about this movie that even though it has humor, it has action, it checks all those boxes, at least for me, that I want in a Transformers movie. But it is a well-made film in a way that it has dramatic beats. You know, you're talking about Anthony Ramos and his brother. He's got a medical condition and he's trying to take care of his family. But also
this is the dude from Into the Heights, right?
Yeah. Okay. In the Heights.
And the bad guys. He was just the voice of the shark. So he even had a song.
Okay.
Great stuff. Yeah.
He's doing a lot of stuff. He's been taking off since Hamilton, obviously, was a huge worldwide mega success. And he's really good in everything he shows up in. And I thought he was good in this. But Stephen Caple Jr., the way that he films this movie and the way that he builds out the characters, it's definitely in the vein of Bumblebee more than a Michael Bay movie. And to me, this may be a bold statement, but to me, this is the closest Transformers live action adaptation that I've seen to the cartoons I used to watch. This felt like Transformers to me.
Interesting.
I was really bored.
Interesting.
And I think I was in the middle. Like there were, I think I just tweeted something like it's equal parts stupid and awesome. Like there are,
I think that's a good way to put it. Yes.
I told my wife after it was over, I was like, it's funny because I'd be watching the movie and I would be like, this might be the awesomest thing I've ever. Nope.
It would just keep
jerking me back and forth. Like the,
yeah.
And I can't remember the stuff that happened because it's nitpicky stuff. But it's the same thing as what happened in Age of Extinction. Sometimes characters would be on one side of like a field and then they'd show up on a completely other side. And it just, there were things I didn't understand why they were doing what. And it was like, it was just crazy. But then they would have these parts that were awesome.
I want to hear specifics because I'll tell you what, I was grinning ear to ear. Okay. And in a Transformers movie, I expect the stupid, quote unquote, right? Like these are giant alien robots, if you will, and they're transforming
into
cars.
Kevin. They're in disguise.
They're robots in disguise, certainly.
But there's more than meets the eye.
The humans are more than meets the eye in this one. I like how one thing I really appreciate about this movie is they have the fan service for fans of not only Transformers, obviously Beast Wars, but they balance the G1 and the Beast Wars fan service. But it doesn't hit you over the head. I thought that their winks and their nods were subtle, whereas other movies with when they pick up IP and they make these movies, they feel like they have to hammer you over the head with every quote. And even though, like, I've seen a clip, and I hope it's good in the movie, but, like, you want to get nuts?
It's just like, oh my gosh,
stop it. Like, we get it. But you don't have to have nonstop fan service. I mean, maybe they think that's what sells tickets, and maybe it does, but from an artistic standpoint, I don't want to watch a movie that's just the greatest hits. I want to watch something fresh and inventive. And this movie, to me, felt like Stephen Caple Jr. and the writers of this film, I feel like they understood, and they understood what makes Transformers fun. They understood the characters, and they made a good balance of the stupid or the bombastic check your mind action and the heart of the film where you have the family. I think centering it around this guy that's caring for his family, taking care of his brother. His mom's a single mom going to work. Do you know who his mom is? The mom from Across the Spider-Verse.
That's right.
Plays the mom in both these movies, both weeks in a row. But I just really liked it. I liked the heart behind it. I liked the acting and the action. I was grinning ear to ear with these robots fighting. I thought this feels like Transformers to me.
I agree. And there were definitely moments where I was like, all right, this is working. Like I am having, when they get their Avengers Endgame scene at the end of the movie, I was like, all right,
I check out with any scene like that. You're right. And it's a valid point, but whenever they have the big field of 8,000 robots versus a few robots, and they're just swinging weapons and blowing up.
It's not that.
It was more like seven robots versus 8,000.
Right. But
it was when Optimus and Primal were both standing side by side, and the rest of the Autobots and the Maximals have joined. You know, they're all standing in a line, and they both get to deliver. You know, the Transformers roll out.
It's Autobots, same,
yeah,
roll out. I was like, same thing as Avengers. Don't roll. Why did they both get say a roll out?
You get like a roly poly.
They're supposed to say maximize.
Barrel roll out.
Yeah. Why didn't they just say roll out? And the other guy says maximize. They both have different lines.
Well, they had to save the maximize. I thought that was like the high point. I was like, yeah, and then
but
nope.
That's what I'm saying, though. I mean, to the first point is that in this movie, my eyes are lighting up when these Transformers transform, say the lines. You have Peter Cullen back, you know, the one and only Optimus Prime.
Did he do the voice of Optimus Primal too?
No, that was Ron Perlman.
Yeah, Ron
Perlman. No, the original Optimus Primal.
Oh, no.
Okay. I think even Ron Perlman voiced him for Reboot or something like that. Because I know Perlman's played Primal before, but I didn't care enough about Beast Wars to look back.
That his voice, though, is close.
I think it's a great voice.
It's a very good, like, not Optimus Prime, but he has, like, the same...
There's a nobility to his voice.
Yes. I totally agree.
I don't think Perlman gets to... Perlman usually ends up... Unless it's Hellboy. He doesn't usually play good guys that often. But he's got a nobility to his voice that I thought really sold that character. He did a good job.
Thought it was great. Some other people. There's a lot of people. Okay, Pete Davidson, I thought, was really good in this role. I liked Pete Davidson as Mirage.
When he started talking, I was like, God damn it.
Just because
I usually hate him, but he was okay. I thought he was fun.
I really liked it.
He has gotten to and I think Pete Davidson is a very smart and a very funny guy. I think he understands comedy. Pete Davidson has gotten to a point with me right now. I'm just like, can you just go away?
He's wearing out his welcome
a little bit.
Just stop dating every starlet on the planet. How are you?
Giant. That's what it is.
Okay.
So Ron Perlman is Optimus. Peter Dinklage plays the bad guy, Scourge.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Cool.
Yeah.
Michelle Yeoh plays Air Razor, another one of the Maximals. Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Coleman Domingo is Unicron. I thought his voice was great. You know who played Unicron in the movie?
Orson Welles, right?
Orson Welles.
Yeah. So in his death throes, he played him because they had to alter his voice.
But I thought Coleman Domingo, his voice sounded menacing, and I thought he sounded a lot like Orson Welles, which, I mean, that guy had a pretty distinctive voice. The other main protagonist is Elena, played by Dominique Fishback. I thought she was very charismatic and likable. I really liked her character as the museum curator.
She has a good singing voice.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Oh, that was okay. If I had one complaint in this movie, I'm not saying I don't have little nitpicky things, but she sings to herself when she gets nervous. There are robots hunting her. I think you maybe should not sing.
That's one of the things. I was like, why are you singing out loud?
Just singing TLC's Waterfalls.
It frustrated me because, you know, I can check my head. These are giant robots. They turn into cars, whatever. I totally get it. You know, I'm not trying to get science involved too heavily here. But also, if these are an advanced species of robots, whatever you want to call them, they would have infrared heat. They would have sound detection. You know,
they do. You see them with infrared heat.
You're breathing. I mean, you can't just hide in the open, and you can't sing, certainly, because a robot can detect any, you know, little pickup of noise. So I didn't like that. As much as I try to suspend disbelief, I think that was a disservice to what they've built, because her character can't do that without getting caught.
The only thing, sorry for this little tangent. The only thing that was cool is when they have that shot of her singing and she's walking forward and you see the spider or whatever crawling.
Yeah.
And you can see it. And then I think it cuts back to her. And when it cuts back, the spider's not there anymore. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool.
There were some really good PG creepy jump scares.
The tunnels?
They were pretty impressive.
Yep.
Is Mark Hamill the voice of the plane?
No, that's
Bender from Futurama.
John DiMaggio.
Did I ever tell you the Comic-Con joke that he told that nobody in the room got except for like three people?
No, what was it?
So I was at Comic-Con in, let's see, I got married in 2010, so I was there in 2011, I think, and it was when Batman Under the Red Hood, the animated movie, was coming out.
Okay.
And he was the voice of the Joker in that.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And somebody asked him questions, and he basically made a cub joke, like, of, you know, like a cub is like a gay dude that is like a little guy.
Not lone wolf cub?
No, that is like into bears.
Okay.
and he makes a joke about a cub or a cubby, and the entire, like, it, we were in Hall H. Like, it was the world premiere of Under the Red Hood, and he makes this joke.
Wow.
And the entire hall just goes silent, and he goes, I guess nobody gets that. And it's like, I can't believe he just made, like, it, I think he was a joke about Robin being a cub.
Oh.
And it was like, it just went over everybody's head. It was very funny. But he, I will tell you, if you've never seen that movie.
Oh, that's my favorite of those.
I cannot recommend it enough. It is a fantastic, it's probably one of the best adaptations. Bruce Greenwood as Batman.
Oh, yeah. So good.
Jensen Ackles as Jason Todd.
Neil Patrick Harris
is Nightwing. Mm-hmm. And John DiMaggio as the Joker.
Nice.
Actually, it's funny because Jensen Ackles is now Batman.
Yeah.
He is the ongoing Batman voice.
So let's talk about the plot of this thing real quick.
Yeah. So we are introduced to our character, and he is not down. Well, I guess down on his luck. He is a whiz with technology. We see him like soldering a cable box. Kids, if you don't know what that is, that's how we had to watch cable back in the day, is we all had boxes on top of our TVs. And there was a way to get free cable. So he's soldering these little things together. He's got a brother who we're not really sure what he's got, but
sickle cell anemia. He says
that later when his hands are kind of messed up. And his mom is working very hard to keep food on the table, but they're falling behind in the bills.
Sonic and Tails reference on the
I'm always, whenever they make references like that, I'm always like, look at the timeline. Uh-huh. And I was like, would Sonic and Tails, but 94, Sonic and Tails would have absolutely been
90. The first one was like 91, I think, on Genesis.
That makes sense.
So this is 1994. So it takes place a few years after Bumblebee, and it's still going on this timeline to where they've rebooted things. So it's nice, like Darren said, that we can kind of get away from the Michael Bay stuff. If you want to watch it, that's fine. There's a couple fun ones in there, but at least I like what they're doing with the story and these character-driven films, because I do think there's a much better balance. You get the big bombastic action and the car chases, but
that's one of those things that I think people, we've talked about it before with like Stephen King, right?
Yeah.
Like the reason Stephen King is on point is because he's a master not only at horror, but he's a master at character building
and world building.
So he builds these characters up. You know, you start to care about Danny, and you start to care about, you know, all of these different characters, and then he hits you with the scary, and you don't want something bad to happen to your characters.
Exactly. What you have to give people a reason to care about something happening. When these movies come out and they don't do any character building and they're just dispensable, you're just like, okay, why do I care? The danger doesn't feel real. There's no threat. You don't care what happens to them. And like you said, in this movie, we care about this guy. He's a good guy. He's taking care of his family. We want his little brother to be okay. And we want him to be able to get a job and take care of them. And
they had a nice rapport, too. They really sell that chemistry.
They do.
And I do like that while he agrees to go help. So basically what happens is there's this key, right? Omnicron is coming. He's got these three, I'm just going to call them Decepticons because that's what they are. He's got these three
Predacons.
Decepticons. Are they all Predacons?
We need to get in the Beast. I looked it up in the Beast Wars cartoon. They're Predacons, and here they're Terrorcons. So I don't know where they.
Okay.
So
they're
both
bad guys.
So
we got to get this right, guys.
Right. I don't want the Transformers. The people coming after us. So this takes place at least in the cartoon, and this take place hundreds of years. There's some kind of time travel involved. Let's just say that. I tried to watch a little recap. They end up explaining that the reason why it's like they come later than, like, he's named after Optimus Prime, but then they end up traveling back to like an old ancient Earth. And so there's actually a time travel element to it. But these are supposed to be people that have evolved. These are like evolved. The cons and the Terracons and the Maximals have evolved, and they are the more like up-to-date version of tech.
Yeah.
And so that's why you get, we didn't mention, but Optimus Primal, his father named him after Optimus Prime, and there's the very cold open of the movie is the Terracons and the Predacons coming after them, and we find out they're working for Unicron. And this is it's Galactus. They had to have taken it from, that's what he is.
Pretty much.
He's a world destroyer. He eats worlds. That's what he did in the 80s movie. And so they're working for him, and he's given the Peter Dinklage villain character, he has given him the like invincibility in exchange for his soul.
You mean like
dark magic or something like that. Yeah.
So not the power cosmic?
It's the same.
Right.
It's exactly what the it's what Galactus gives to the Silver Surfer. It's the same thing.
Right. So you can kind of see where they're going with this. Yeah. Scourge. So he's worked doing his bidding, and we find out that Unicron needs a way to be able to teleport across dimensions, and so there's a key that the Maximals have taken and hidden. So his dad sacrifices himself, as Primes usually do, and Optimus Primal becomes the new Prime and the leader of the Maximals. He heads off with the key, and we later find out that they escape to Earth, basically, with the key. Right. And then our characters are eventually, because Optimus Prime is looking for a way home to Cybertron, they're looking for a way to get back, and they see that this key, this MacGuffin, is the way that they're going to be able to get home, but it's also what the Big Bad's looking for. So it's like this race to the key, but then also, do we use it for the good guys, or do we risk it falling into the hands of the bad guys?
Well, which, I think that comes from our main character, right? Like, I do like that his motivation is like, yeah, I'm going to go with you, I'm going to help you. But at the same time, he's like, I'm going to smash this.
I love it.
Like, we're not...
What a great motivation, right? Like, as a human, he wants to protect Earth. And of course, I mean, as you can predict, I mean, it goes the way that, you know, Optimus Prime, good dude, got to save my friend. I got to get back home. Like, please don't destroy it, because, you know, we can do both. We can protect Earth and go home. And right. then we see how well, you know, it's not exactly an easy task.
Whoops.
But Anthony Ramos is like, no, dude, this is my home. I'm going to defend it. And he wants to destroy the key. So I love that. It goes back to what we talked about a little bit last week with who's the villain, who's the antagonist,
sure,
who's the
sure,
good
sure.
guy.
There's definitely a villain in this one.
There's a villain in this one for sure. But their motivations come from good. Anthony Ramos isn't the villain because he's trying to destroy Optimus Prime's way home, right? You know, but he is the hero of Earth. He's trying to save Earth. Optimus Prime wants to save his friend, who we'll get into, that gets basically killed.
How many times have they killed Bumblebee? I feel like that guy dies all the time.
He gets hurt a lot, for sure.
This is the first time they killed Optimus in the second one and brought him, so it's the same arc.
Yeah,
but I think this is the first time they killed Bumblebee in this.
I'm going to call it the Allspark. That's not what it is.
Rodimus Prime, Hot Rod.
The Matrix.
Hot Rod. That's what it was. Yes, it was Hot Rod. Oh, man. Yep. And then they bring him back.
Which is what the Allspark is. So yes. if you watch these new movies and you never watch the cartoon, the spark is what is the life force of Transformers, and Optimus Prime keeps the spark in his chest. And so the Matrix is what... Is that what they called it? Just the Matrix in the
cartoon? And people actually think that it ripped off the Matrix the Autobot Matrix of Leadership came way before that.
Yeah, right. So that is basically the analog. They're the same things. The power that, you know, that powers the Transformers. But anyway, okay. So he's down on his luck. We already said it. His brother needs help. They go to the hospital. They're getting turned away because they can't pay their bills. And so he is basically forced, but he has to make the tough decision. He's got a friend who wants him to help pull off a heist to steal a car, and he's hesitant, but then he gets turned away from a job. He's been discharged, but he was in the army.
He was in the military, and he left because his brother was sick.
Yeah.
And he helped his family over, you know, his duty to his job.
And got a reputation as being lazy or not.
Well, that he's not dependable, but it's like he was Weesey. He was taking care of his brother, but from a job application standpoint,
he's sure like the Peter Parker of the story.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure if you leave the military, you're AWOL.
AWOL.
Well, I'm sure that I don't think he's AWOL. I think he probably left, but maybe he was dishonorably discharged. I don't know. I don't think he just left, though, because he would be in prison, right?
Like, you go to jail for that.
But this isn't for me. I'm going to go back and work for Radio Shack.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
He ends up trying to steal Mirage, which is this silver and blue little Porsche that's a car that's been sitting in this one spot forever. And in the process, of course, we hear Pete Davidson turn on, and we get a really, I will say, like, between Bumblebee and this, they figured out how to make the giant, not even giant robots, but A, make the giant robots look and emote. Like, when we get to see Mirage's face, it doesn't look like Pete Davidson, but it does look like a robot, but you can see the face. You can see everything. You can see the eyes move and the nostrils flare and everything.
From the first Transformers, the special effects were really good. I think Michael Bay even said, we have our problems with Michael Bay, but as a technician, like, his thing was like, we need to, like, the shadows. He talked about ILM.
It's ILM, so
we fixed that. And so they do have good... I don't want to say great designs, but they're believable as special effects. Well, I buy that they're living beings.
I agree, and that's the thing I want to touch upon, because we talk about bad CGI all the time and Uncanny Valley and stuff that doesn't blend in with the surroundings. This movie, clearly, we're not dumb. We know they're CGI robots, but I think they blend in with the real world perfectly. Like, it never took me out going, that's bad special effects. Like, the character models and designs, I think, are really, really good in this movie.
And they have it down to a science, yeah.
And yes, they blend in very well, where I think Bumblebee was very good, too. They've gotten it to a point where now your brain does just kind of check out, and they're not distracting. Where in some of those early movies, even though it was very good, especially for the time, there were a lot of big, you know, CGI robots crashing into each other where it didn't have a weight to them.
Well, that's here's my problem with the special effects are great, right? And in Bumblebee, they're at the service of a story that actually works, and they've got very heartfelt human moments. My problem is that you animate these things for millions of dollars, and you have a robot peeing on John Turturro. You have a part where, John Turturro, he's underneath a giant robot, and you can see it's like testicles banging back and forth because it's the like wrecking balls. You have the racist robots. You have, in Age of Extinction, and this is going to sound, somebody did a piece on this, but Michael Bay has a problem with women. There is a part where the Autobots are on an alien spaceship, and they encounter, I'm not kidding you, they encounter a robot that looks like a vagina. Like, it's got two lips and a mouth, and it's yelling at and screeching at them. And the Autobots, the John Goodman characters, they're like, this is the ugliest thing I've ever seen. And then the thing spits at them. It squirts at them. And then John Goodman shoots it and kills it. And I'm like, why are we animating this? Who told anybody that you could spend millions of dollars for this? Didn't somebody say, let's not do this? Why are we animating this? It's just, that's what I'm talking about. The effects are great, but when they're at the service of a story and character beats that are just so rancid, that's when I have a problem with them. It's a waste.
And that's, I mean, to that point, that's really gross.
I'm not kidding you. Look it up. I believe you.
But like, there are, you know, that's what kind of frustrates me about the Marvel stuff at times is, you're telling me that you can animate and you can create this giant gorilla, robotic gorilla, and everything works, right? When he's swinging through the jungles of Peru, and it's seamless. It looks incredible. But you can't put Mark Ruffalo's head
in a suit.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
You know, or even
understand.
The Heimdall's kid in Thor Love and Thunder.
Well, you know, Joe, like, if what we're led to believe is true, and a lot of people have spoken up, they pay very little compared to the industry standard, and they rush them. And that is the problem, is you're going to start running into quality control issues, is you can't tell people, you know, even a month or just several weeks up until the release of a movie, hey, let's go just change this, because there's so much that goes into it. It's not just all the animators that are sitting there, you know, they have to rig these character models to do certain things. Then they have to change all these little details, and it has to be re-rendered with shadow and lighting. And there's a lot of work that goes into it. And to just tell them to go do it real quick, especially if it's like an afterthought, or, oh, we need whoever to come into the scene they're going to be, they're filming over here in this country because they're doing a movie here. They'll film it. They'll send you the footage. Now you just wrap them in a robot. Like, it just doesn't work.
I think maybe the thing, sorry if we're going on an MCU tangent, but the MCU is really good at distracting you. Like, the charm of the actors and the dialogue is so good.
That's fair.
That you don't notice. And again, I tweeted something about this. The worst scene in Age of Ultron, because the whole movie is supposed to be about Tony Stark, the hubris of creating this Ultron being, right? And then he doesn't, you think that he's going to learn something, he doesn't. At the end, he just creates a new robot.
Right.
And this time it works. And because that scene where Vision lifts up the hammer, it's a great punchline. That covers up the fact that they've completely half-assed the plot, because they need to introduce the Vision. They need to have something in there, and so they do this to distract you from that. Yeah. I think with Transformers, maybe they know that the human characters are not the draw, so they really have to focus on making those special effects work. I think with Thor Love and Thunder, from what I've seen, I think they are trying to smooth over the bad special effects with charm, and we're starting to see through it, so it doesn't work. They really have to step back into it.
I think as good as Hemsworth is, right, he can only do so much.
Right. He's carrying the weight on his shoulders. Literally. And they're big shoulders, but still, it's a lot of weight.
But I think, to that point, I do think that they do, with Haley Steinfeld's character and with these characters here, they give what you need in a Transformers movie is you need somebody that you can relate to, right? So when you've got these humans who are relatable characters who have relatable issues, you get invested in them, just like the Stephen King thing, where you become invested in them and you want to see them win. And when they do, they build these relationships, like the relationship between Mirage and I'm sorry, I can't remember this character's
Noah
is the
when you Mirage and Noah, and it starts as kind of like, you know, Mirage is like, hey man, we're cool. You know, he's a very
hilarious
90s character.
When he's holding the, what is he holding? A pipe or something at him? And he holds the, and then Mirage transforms the big gun in his hand. He's like, right. You really want to do this? He's like, you know, and then he stays there with the pipe. He's like, man, I respect that. All right.
I do like that he made an Ace Ventura joke.
Which one was it?
He was like, all righty then.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a bunch of pretty funny.
Man, that is, I was like, wait, when did Ace Ventura come out? I was like, oh, 1994.
Or how about that? You've been inside me.
Oh, yeah.
I could not believe it.
That
it does
funny.
Feel like Pete Davidson may have written a couple of those lines.
Yeah.
You know?
It was great. Because he's like, we're close. You've been inside
you've
me.
You've been inside me.
That's a good joke that works, though, because kids aren't going to get with
no,
it.
No.
But adults get. And
it's very, it's very literal. I mean, he's been inside the car.
Literally.
So it's you can explain it away. It's not something you have to, you know, spend a bunch of time on. But obviously we get what?
But he's also going to be inside him later. Like, literally.
Literally.
That was foreshadowing for the listeners.
Please let's come back to that part.
So I do want to mention, so you talk about the characterization. Not only do we have Noah and his family, which I think is a really compelling storyline, but the Dominique Fishback character. She is a character who her father was like a blue-collar worker, but he was really smart. He was well-read. She also didn't go to college, but he taught her, like, you don't need to go to school and all this to learn all these things.
Right.
And she studied and researched and got into archaeology. She then ends up getting an internship or works at this museum where, obviously, you see the curator doesn't know jack crap, but
she's relying on her the entire time,
right, and using her for all her knowledge. And we see that she's smart. She sees, I thought this would have been a great one for Tom, that it looks like the Maltese Falcon.
It looked just like the Maltese Falcon,
and, right? Yep. That has to be a nod to that. Yep. But they discover from Peru,
it's a MacGuffin, so
they discover this falcon statue, and we see that it has the Maximal symbol on it, so we know that this has something to do with our characters from the cold open. And she ends up, when the curator's like, yeah, we're going to put it on display and say it's from wherever. And she's like, I don't think this is right. And the curator's like, that's nice. See you later. You know, don't forget to clean up and lock, turn the lights off.
Yeah.
And she sneaks in and she starts analyzing it. But in the process of doing this 3D scan, it starts breaking apart.
She
and
breaks
she's like,
it apart.
I'm so going to get fired.
Yeah. But that's
you know,
a lot.
You know what I thought was great? And sorry, writing, I really appreciated this, is it shows you the Noah character and how he's just trying to make ends meet. Nobody believes him, right? Nobody's like, we can't do this. You can't get your doctor's appointment. You can't get your interview, right? You're not dependent. And then he decides he's going to break the law, right? Because that's the option, only option on the table. And at the same time, it juxtaposes that with the Elena character breaking the law by breaking into that lab. I really like that touch that they kind of
That's a really good
connected.
I never
you know
put
mean?
That together.
Similar
that's
trajectories,
really good.
Yeah,
right?
That was great. And so they're the same.
It's and they're great. Both minorities too.
Yeah.
Which,
You
know, so you got to think, like, you've got in the talk about representation. So not only for the different ethnicities, but you have one Maximal who is played by Lisa Koshy. She plays like the motorcycle character. I think she's from G1.
RC?
She looked like a character model from G1. There was a pink.
That's RC.
So you have RC from G1, which I loved seeing that character, right?
It's a great
so the
character model.
Female
man,
representation
so good.
From as a robot, right?
She's and then they, still got the Princess Leia ears.
Absolutely, she does, yes.
And they give you a bad guy with Michaela J. Rodriguez as Nightbird. And so,
Michelle Yeoh.
Well, right. And then good point. You have Michelle Yeoh as being one of the main Maximals who gets split off from them, and we discover her first, even before Optimus Primal. Noah does, at least. So you have that representation, but then also your lead characters, right? You have Hispanic Anthony Ramos, who he's got the Puerto Rican flag right in his bedroom, amongst all the great 90s.
Of course.
You know, Notorious B.I.G. and Wu-Tang and Tupac. Oh, this takes place on the day of the Bronco chase. Did you see OJ's on the TV?
I did see
Oh
that.
My gosh, that's cool. Yes. Yeah.
So it's dated. You can tell it takes place on whatever
they
that date is.
It. Yeah.
Yeah, and 1994, so we know exactly when this takes place. So many great 90s references. But again, you have a Hispanic lead actor and a black lead actor. And what a difference from Shia LaBeouf and Megan Fox, right? Like, what a difference. Here's a white guy and a white woman lead character. And so I love the representation from the robots.
It makes the minorities the heroes at the, like, we'll get to it. But where Noah ends up in that last, second to last scene that he's in, or you see Elena on 60 Minutes. So they've made a difference. I think that's great.
I love it. I do too. I think it's so important. We've touched upon this. And I know I don't
want to. No, we've had 3 weeks of it, though.
I don't want to sound like a broken record, but it's so important to do this. And like, for the people that take umbrage with it, I just will never understand, because I watched this movie and I thought the lead characters were great. I thought they were funny and charismatic and good in the action roles, all that stuff. I never once look at those characters and go like, oh, they've taken away my lead characters. Like, I have an entire history of 100 years of lead characters that look like me. They're still there. They're still getting made, but to have this representation is so important, and they do a great job. So I just,
you guys, you still have your idiot screechy Shia LaBeouf character to represent.
Yeah,
yeah.
So
don't
what are
worry.
You complaining about? Yeah,
he's not going anywhere.
Well. Oh, that character in that movie.
Shia is.
I was
going
to say it doesn't hold up quite as well as it used to. But anyway, so I like the lead characters. I really like the Dominique Fishback character. I thought she was very charming. I don't like the singing to herself thing. I think that was misused because of the situation. But all in all, I thought she did a really great job. They made her smart. You know, like she's
resourceful. She's able to crack puzzles and codes.
They're giving the female lead characters things to do, which I'm not, you know, Darren mentioned that, you know, they gave Megan Fox a little bit of
a little bit,
but they're taking these characters between Haley Steinfeld and the character in this one, Elena, I think. Yeah, Elena's.
Yeah.
They're giving them things to do.
They have agency in these movies, as
giving them
just
agency.
Being dragged around.
Yeah. Exactly. So we find out that Optimus Prime wants to go get the key. Elena sets it off when she's doing the examination on the Falcon. Big light in the sky. Optimus Prime sees it, and he says, "Autobots, converge. I found a way home." And that's when they all get together. He's in the middle of having a crisis of faith. Should I steal this Porsche? You know, this is all I've got left, but like, I don't want to do this.
I love that, like, every time the cops are trying to stop him, he's like, "I'm not driving." Yeah. Like, look, he puts his hands up. He's like, "I'm not doing anything."
And it's great that this takes place in a time where there's not all the smart cars. Not as much footage.
I got to tell you, that is a thing that they're going to have to start doing, right? You're going to have to start setting movies in a time frame. You know, like, you can't...
Without cell phones, like for a lot of movies in the past.
Like, new slasher flicks.
Right.
Like, what if they... Everybody has a cell phone.
Let me just press my watch. Let me press my phone.
Right.
Let me,
I can just record you. I can call 911 and we're good to go.
Yeah.
You can't.
They have to give them a reason why they're out. Or, you know, they have to tell them, why can't we use our cell phones?
Even now, like, you walk through the woods, you got service. You're gonna have service.
Starlink or whatever, you know, you've got the satellites out there. But so this is our first big chase, and I thought it was really well done, really fun with the Porsche.
Oh, those cops are dead, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
I did not survive those crashes.
The one where he goes up on the side and then
he flips and there's one that goes like face first into like
the median.
Median. Like, that dude's dead. You know, it's in 1994. They're not wearing seatbelts. Those guys are dead.
Jeez. So we don't see them die, but there are some catastrophic
car because there was nothing left but goo with how fast they were going.
But it's a really good car sequence, and then anyway they all go meet up, and this is where we see our Autobots, and Optimus Prime explains his thing and why he wants to get home, and then we find out Mirage brought this human into it, and Optimus Prime doesn't trust humans at this point. And there's that, this is the line we get where we know it exists in the same universe, where he's like, "B, I know that you found a human that you like, whatever."
I don't ever want to hear Optimus Prime called Bumblebee B ever again.
Why is that?
I don't like it at all.
That's what he
I
calls
don't know.
Him.
It's better than Bumble.
I guess that's true.
BB.
I guess that's fair.
BB.
Both of those are there. It is all bad. Like, I don't know why.
What do you want him to call him? Bumblebee?
I don't know. But like,
Bumblebee Tuna?
Bumblebee Tuna. That's an Ace Ventura a 2 Bumblebee tuna. Joke. That's an Ace Ventura. You can't make that. That movie hasn't come out yet.
Not for another year. Yeah.
That's right. But like,
well,
I don't know.
We don't probably want to make Ace Ventura 1 references anymore. Those don't hold up either, at least the end.
We won't make fun of Finkel and Einhorn. We'll just leave that alone. Everything else up until that is fine. Oh, man, when he turns her around.
I know. Sorry.
Holy shit.
Your gun is sticking into my hip pocket.
Oh. Moving on.
He's got, like, the plunger on his face. Yeah, so, like, I don't know. For whatever reason, it felt like I don't like Optimus Prime using slang. And I know that B is not slang.
It's
but it was just
a nickname.
I know, but it felt weird. I didn't
okay,
like it.
So anyway, they basically are like...
You gotta get past these things, Joe.
I know. It's hard.
So they've got to get to the key. Mirage is like, hey, I know a little human that's sneaky because they don't want a bunch of huge robots trying to burst into this facility. They want to keep a low-key, you know, they want to grab the key, get out of there. So they enlist, like... Optimus Prime is reluctant, but they enlist Noah to go in. You know, Mirage goes to bat for him, and they end up getting in there. He transforms himself into a garbage truck. They infiltrate the facility, and then when they get there, we cut to the Terracons. Are they Terracons? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah.
Okay, the bad guys, Scourge and the Terracons. They
the cons.
The cons. There you go. They've also, you know, detected the presence of the key, and they're like, oh, great, they're going to lead us right to it. So there's a little face-to-face with Noah and Elena, and Elena's like, I like this. She's like, what are you trying to do? You're trying to steal this. And he's like, no, it's not what it looks like. And then he's like, oh, well, it's kind
of exactly what it looks like.
Again, funny little lines. They've got good chemistry. There's funny lines in it. And meanwhile, while they're fighting over this thing, the Terracons come and just like blow a hole in the museum.
Well, what I like about this is we don't really get an idea of how powerful the Terracons are. Like, yeah, they took out Optimus Primal's dad fairly quickly, but we didn't, you know, you don't have any history with that character, right? Yeah. You don't know. But when
from that little hint in the beginning, you do get the idea that like these guys mean business, right? They're trying to fight him off.
Yeah.
And you know,
he
almost
cuts that Ape Link character in half.
They basically, because of whatever Unicron has done to this character, he is able to just go through and destroy anybody. There's, you know, but
when we finally get to see him go toe to toe against Optimus Prime has a tendency to just, again, run through people.
He's Optimus Prime. He's the guy, right? Prime.
Yeah, and he cannot stop.
I'm having flashbacks to the movie with Megatron when he shows Megatron mercy, and Megatron turns around and shoots him and ends up killing him.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
That's what you get.
You don't mess with the Megatron or the Tron. That's right. The Tron is Prime.
Yeah. But Scourge, I mean, they're
plowing
decimating
through.
What?
Plowing through them. It's good.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Good
they're decimating
them
all.
They're on the campus just taking, I mean, they're stomping through things and throwing them into statues, and it's a good little showdown.
I mean, Bumblebee shows up, and we think that, you know, Bumblebee has been a hero this entire time, and he has the hero pose where he's got Optimus's axe, and he comes through, and Scourge is so fast that he just turns around and guts Bumblebee.
He runs it right through him and like holds him up by
the chest.
His sword. Yeah. And I mean, this is a gut-wrenching moment because if you watch Bumblebee, the movie, and we got to know him as basically the main character, the main Transformer character, and then he comes in as the hero here and, you know, they kill him.
Take him out.
It's one of those comic book type deaths where you're like, are they really going to kill Bumblebee? But I mean, it seemed pretty serious.
You know, what was cool. What I really liked is because it seems like all the other, again, I haven't seen last night, so I don't know for sure, but it seems like all the other Transformers movies are pretty much Bumblebee centric.
Yeah, right.
So I like that they made this one Optimus Prime centric. It's Optimus Prime that has the character arc, which I appreciated. Like, he doesn't trust humans, then he trusts you. It's simple, but at least it's there.
Yeah, I really like it too.
Yeah, yeah. So that was cool.
Yeah,
and I do like the line. So our characters run out of the building, and I do like the line where Mirage is like, "Oh, you're still alive. Great."
that is really funny.
They scoop up the heroes, and the Autobots have to get out of there. Like they are. I think they lose the key.
Well, yeah, Scourge has the key.
Yeah, Scourge has the key. And I was like, well, we've got a lot of movie left.
Half of the key.
Well, we find out they cut away. He goes to Unicron and says, hey, I've got the key.
When Air Razor comes in and saves.
Right,
saves.
Air Razor comes in with her flamethrower, voiced by Michelle Yeoh, and she kind of saves them, and they run away. So, like, we don't want to mess with these guys. And she says, they've got half the key. And then Unicron, we cut back, and he's, like, got Scourge up in the air, like about to rip it in half or something, and says, yeah. You mess up one more time, you're done for.
You know what I thought was cool, and this is fan service stuff, and first of all, they played the unicorn theme, the Vince unicorn theme.
They
play it when you see him. But also, when Scourge keeps going back and saying, look what I've done for you, Master, and it's like, no, you haven't, and he like messes with him and tortures him.
Yeah.
It's the same thing as the cartoon where Galvatron keeps going to Unicron. Like, I've done this to Unicron.
Oh,
so I like that.
Good
it's
call.
Fan service, but it's not just there to go, oh, point and look at this.
And that's what I'm saying.
It's part of
right?
the story.
It's understated. Everything.
So I like
Well, especially for me as someone who loves the movie, is, you know, when I say the movie, we're talking about the cartoon. I go,
you've got the touch, Kevin. I get it.
Yeah. You got the touch. I love that. So I'm like, they put Unicron in one of these movies. I never thought that we would see Unicron in one of these modern reboots.
Welcome to the Marvel movies for me, Kevin.
Yeah, but I'm like, they did it, right? And I thought that's such a cool deep cut where most people watching this, especially if you grew up with the Michael Bay stuff, you've never heard of or don't, you know, you don't know who Unicron is, and they make him the big bad of this, and I thought it was really neat. And like Darren said, all those little homages to the characters, they never feel heavy-handed.
They ever introduced the Dinobots?
In Age of Extinction, yeah. You have a scene where Optimus is riding on freaking Grimlock.
Grimlock
okay.
is the coolest okay. character, and I need them to do service to the Dinobots and Grimlock.
Yeah, they did not do good.
So I saw this at the Draft House, and if you, I've talked them up a lot, and I think they're the best theater in St. Louis.
Hey, I saw this at the Draft House.
I know. I'm so glad you got to go.
It was my first theatrical experience at the Draft.
It's a fantastic.
Yeah, I bought the season pass. I'm so excited to go there. It's a great
Darren, theater. do you have one for close to you?
Festival or something like that?
The Alamo Draft House?
Alamo, we don't have, no. No, the okay. closest, no, we don't. Not
Bummer.
Even. I would love it's, it. I would love it.
They're fantastic. Yeah. But they always show something that might have something to do with the movie you're going to see. So they showed a clip of the Dinobots taking on the Constructicons,
yeah,
and they all come together.
Devastator. Oh yeah,
and I was
that's
like,
my stuff
dude,
right there.
Are we gonna get like the Dinobots are gonna show up? And I was kind of bummed because
we need the Dinobots versus Devastator and the Constructicons.
Yeah.
We got to get that, and they got to do it right.
Did
but
they
anyway,
have the they had the Destructicons in the other ones too?
I think they did, but the
like
Constructicons. But they were not done right. What I mean, okay. like when you see these character models, when you see RC and you see Optimus Prime looking like, you know, they look like Transformers. They look like G1. And for better or for worse, and I mean, they do, well, it's definitely for better. Beast Wars, as rudimentary as it was, you know, they have the animal character designs and everything. And they made them look really good in this movie. And
agreed.
These movies feel like Transformers, like the cartoon. And I appreciate all those character models. But to breeze through the story, though, so Elena sends them to Peru. They say, we got to go there. That's when we get the big airplane that's voiced by John DiMaggio. And he, you know, they end up taking him. And he's all rickety. But they go to Peru. There's a big festival. I don't know if you guys caught it, but in the festival, the parade, all the floats are different animals that are like Maximal type animals.
So I took that as like they know, like this village knows that the Maximals exist.
They've been their protectors, like of.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah exactly. Yeah, yeah. So I thought
it's
that
like, it's like Wakanda.
It is kind of like Wakanda. Yeah, right.
But what I really like is so they eventually they're trying to find the other key and they end up tracking it down, going into these catacombs or whatever you want to call them. Good horror type
jump scares.
The spider
really good
robots. It's not in there, but we find out it's because Optimus Primal had taken it and had been safeguarding it. So when we get to Optimus Primal and all the animals and they get together, they go to this village in Peru, and here Optimus Prime is still leery of humans, and you get the line from Optimus Primal again, like halfway through the movie and after you've gotten to know all these characters, and he says that there's more than meets the eye with the humans, and we've never seen it turned around like that. So I like how you get that fan service, but they flipped it and trying to convince Optimus that you can trust humans. There are good ones. So I like
it. What's funny about that arc, and again, I like that it's there, but it's funny that Optimus in the cartoon is such a hero, and he's so, like, what is his like, what is it? Freedom is the right of all sentient beings. That's his
yes,
saying,
yes.
right?
Yeah.
But in Age of Extinction, it's weird because he's like, ah, kill all humans. Like, all humans, much anybody that opposes us must die. And it's like, what's happening?
Right.
And he's like, he's ripping people's spines out. Like, he even did that in the third one, stuff like that. So even though he has that arc, he's still in this one. He's like, I'm going to kill that guy. I'm going to kill this. Rip out his spine. I'm going to rip off his head. And he does it still. But it's just weird that that stuff is there.
But yeah, but it was, I mean... It wasn't as aggressive as Age of Extinction.
Right.
And it was also because he killed Bumblebee. I do like that he's mad because his best friend and, you know, and also he feels guilty, right? Optimus is now carrying this guilt. Talk about the characterization. We know that Optimus is the leader, as he often does, feels that he has failed his people.
Elena keeps saying, you know, you see him as this gruff, like, asshole. Right, but he's like, imagine the weight that's on his shoulders, and it's been on his shoulders for all this time.
Yeah,
so that's great.
Got his people trapped here. Yeah,
just though to hear Optimus Prime say, "I'll rip his skull out," it's like, oh, all right, I didn't expect Optimus to say that.
Yeah, no, it is a little bit much, but he's feeling the grief. We see why he does it. You know, it makes sense. He has the motivation there,
and he overcomes it. So that's.
Yeah, and he's also foreshadowing for, you know, it's the whole call your shot, right?
Yeah,
I'm going to do this, and then he does it later. But anyway, so they meet up with them, and they're like, well, yeah, we got to get this key. So we find out that Scourge had fired some kind of a disc that attached itself to Air Razor, and it's, like, infecting her. It's, you know, turning red. And
she got a zombie bite, basically.
Yeah, and so she ends up turning, and...
Which I think in Beast Wars, I think there is a character that does turn. On the Maximals, like they, it's either.
We'll have to take your word for it.
I think there's two. Yeah. I was doing some research, and there's a Dinobot. Dinobot goes to the Maximals,
and then there's somebody from the Maximals.
Dinobot,
goes to,
I think, is like a raptor, and that's the Starscream.
That's
of,
it. Yeah.
Beast Wars. But then there's also one, I think. Well, there's a weird thing that I saw that a Maximal and a Terracon are dating. The show sounds like it's kind of bonkers. From what I understand, the first season was pretty corny, and the second season they start introducing G1 characters. Optimus is at some point, so it starts to feel like I think the writers were like, "Hey, maybe we should watch that thing that the show we're making is based on." They start incorporating some more of that, and it gets better. I heard season 2 is really, really good. 3 is like, kind of falters a little, but
They started introducing more mythology, and it started getting a little deeper.
So I think the first one. They're like, what do we got to do to sell toys? Okay, they're animals.
Like, the Hasbro way, baby.
They really didn't. I mean, the fact that the showrunner and the writer had never seen G1, like,
that's crazy to me.
That just tells you everything you need to know. They were hired to sell toys. Right. And, you know, even though that's the goal, it's like eventually, I think for season 2, they said, let's bring on some people that understand the characters. And it gets better from everything that I understand. But anyway, from here on, it's the MacGuffin chase. They're trying to get the other half of the key. But you care about these characters now. And Optimus Primal is forced to kill Air Razor.
Oh, yeah. That was good.
Yeah, that was good. It was really well done.
And you felt
I like how she tells him it's okay. Like, you do this.
Yeah.
I like that.
You have to do this.
At any cost, or what? There's a line that they use.
At any cost. But it's also juxtaposed with when Optimus loses Bumblebee. Mm-hmm. I like that they kind of get the same kind of
They're both leaders that are burdened with doing things hard and making tough decisions.
Just that one character matching is better than anything in any of the Michael Bay movies. Like,
exactly.
That's how lazy those Michael Bay movies are. They're not paying as much attention to
There's no character. Subtlety to the Michael Bay movies. That's the thing. And
he wants to be smashy.
You've got these parallel characters, the human characters, the parallels between I keep wanting to say Autobots because that's what Transformers are called to me, but the Maximals and the Transformers have these parallels, and I really like that. But he's forced to make that tough call, and then now the Maximals and the Autobots have to team up.
We should also say that they have laid Bumblebee on a pile of what's their energy source?
Energon,
which is all over Peru, and while it's not going to work now, Optimus Primal says, I don't know, it might.
A massive amount
of energy might wake this thing up. And
heck,
it's just like, well, okay, we know, but got it. Check. Yeah.
You get it.
And then we get the Avengers Endgame scene where we've got our guy.
See, I was paying for my food at this point, so it was okay. So that's the good and the bad part. Where I'm like, okay, this is like, this movie had me until the very end, and while I still really enjoyed it, you're right. It was the beam in the sky. It was the Avengers. Yeah. It was the
every movie since
every Avengers. Third act.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like where that. Wonder Woman falls apart. It's kind of the same thing. Really strong until that third act, and But here's the thing: the movie was so good up until that point. And when I say so good, I mean, it knows what it wants to be, and it nails what it's trying to do as a Transformers movie. It's so good until this third act, where I give it a pass because I'm like, okay, I don't know how else was it going to end up. You've got a World Eater Unicron beaming Earth and trying to destroy it, and you want to have robots punching each other. I'm not sure what the smaller, more contained ending would be.
I don't think there is.
Well, so we're at the end. Right? You're talking about the end game part where they're all charging. We're right. Yeah. We're there, right? I'm not jumping ahead or anything.
No, we're there. Unless you think something else happened.
I'm just saying that they're hitting. People are looking at the MCU for that's the model that's going on right now. People are looking at the MCU. How are they making this work? And so they're just, let's just do the same thing that they're doing. And that's what Wonder Woman does. They all just try to copy what's come before. It just depends, like we were talking about with the special effects, is how sincere is the story? Like Wonder Woman, it does lose its way and all the stupid, because it has to have those in there for some reason. Yeah. But then it does bring it back where Wonder Woman's like, I believe in love. It's like the heart. And her sincerity is what gets you back. And sorry if I'm jumping ahead. I know there's a bunch of fighting and stuff like that. I thought it was funny, first of all, that Scourge has this dark matter, but then they're able to beat him. Anyway, we haven't talked about the part where they join, right?
Yeah,
we need to talk about that, obviously, before I get to my
point. Noah, I may have been ordering a drink at this point. Remind me.
So Noah is there. Mirage. You've got Noah and Elena going underneath the bridge. They pull Noah out, and Elena has to keep going.
Oh, there's a failsafe. We got to mention. So the key is combined at this point, and once the key gets combined, Unicron can teleport there, and he's starting
to come through.
But there's one failsafe, of course.
One hole in the Death Star.
Our failsafe was that we split this apart so they couldn't be joined, because that'd be kind of
the little staff in the first Avengers that can penetrate.
Yeah, the Loki Pokey stick. Yeah.
Oh, but if they are joined, there's a secret password.
Joe, I love you.
That's a Kevin Smith thing. I can't take credit for that. That's right.
But so there is a fail safe, but they're like, dude, the password died with Air Razor. Like, one's going to know this password. But of course, Elena studied all the symbols.
Like,
I got it.
I thought it was funny that Mirage has that plan. I'm Mirage, right? And it works for like maybe 10 seconds.
Yeah, right. When we saw it work earlier, it was really good. Yeah. His power is that he can create holograms. And I like how they even created Anthony Ramos holograms. And he's like, hey, what's up? Like, it's like Anthony Ramos doing a Pete Davidson impression, because he's looking at him as Pete Davidson as Mirage.
That's funny.
But so then we see it here, and he's like, yeah, I'm Mirage.
So basically, Noah is dead to rights, and Mirage steps in and takes the shot
because he promised his little brother. He brought a walkie-talkie, and apparently they've been communicating. And the little brother said, you watch my brother's back. You do not let anything happen to him. And he made a promise.
That was another thing, though, where I was like, how is that walkie-talkie communicating across the planet?
Well, you've got to.
And then you're like, all right, whatever. Yeah.
He's in a robot arm. I don't know.
It just kept doing these things where, hold on,
Darren.
What? Darren. But then they would bring it back.
Darren, first of all, no. Just no. Stop it. Why are you asking? That's ridiculous to even ask that.
Well, it's the same thing, just to go back, when Mirage turns into the garbage truck, I was like, how does the physics work that he's able to turn around? And then
that goes back to
the cartoon where Megatron is this huge robot, and then he turns into a gun. And it's like, Starscream, just crush him. Yeah. While you're holding the gun, just crush him. Like, what's going on?
Just break it.
Thank you. I'm glad you mentioned that because that was going to be my exact complaint. You can't. Transformers can transform. How does one of those cassette tape robots turn into a big, full size? It doesn't make any sense. But anyway, I took it seriously as just that they have this super advanced technology where he tapped into the brother's walkie-talkie and gave it a transmitter or whatever. Like, you can explain that away and whatever.
But basically, we think the Mirage is going to die. And he's a character that, given what we've seen in these movies, it's like, okay, you could do this, right? Like, the stakes are just high enough that you could lose this
character. We like him, and it gives you a character to care about. Like, if in a lesser movie, we don't care if one of these new robots dies, but like, the writing is so good that we care about Noah, we care about Mirage, we care about these characters, and so much so that going back to when Optimus Primal has to break Air Razor's neck or whatever, crush her to death, however he kills her, like, that almost made me emotional, because I had just in this short time seen how good of friends they were, and they were just reunited, everything they've been through, yeah. and he has to kill his teammate. And
right.
Holy cow, they sell the sincerity. Again, like,
the yes, they do. They really do. So and that, again, that goes, I think that goes back, we've talked about it a billion times, but able to show emotion through a CG mm-hmm. face is what sells that, right? Like, that's the selling point.
Rocket Raccoon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great example.
Look how well
that's another
characters
thing.
Are.
If they had made, sorry, another tangent, if they had made Guardians of the Galaxy have Quantumania special effects, we wouldn't have bought those characters.
Absolutely yeah. not.
It's so important. You have to make Rocket and Lila and Flora. You have to make them so...
but.
Believable and heartfelt.
So,
yeah.
so right, it's not only better animation, but the writing. See, that's yeah. the difference, the James Gunn difference. As we talk about it, and we'll say it again and again and again, James Gunn understands the heart of these characters.
Yes.
And if you don't make us care about them, then whatever happens to them doesn't really matter. But he makes us care about CG animals, not just one, but four of them. And we yeah. are heartbroken and devastated when things happen to them. Mm-hmm. And it's right. what they do with this movie. They make us care about giant robot cars. Like, you know, we should be like, oh, that's just a robot, right? Like, but mm-hmm. we don't feel that way about when it's right. done right. Transformers aren't just robots. Yeah. They are friends. Right, they have become friends and family, and they do what Fast and Furious does wrong, and those are humans, right?
Exactly.
We don't
well,
feel
less, the robots in this are more human than the humans.
Right, yeah, right, I mean. Right, right. Like yeah. they're trying to sell family, but it's written in a way that's so ludicrous that you well,
hey, look what you look at you, yeah, good
just, well, you just you don't buy it. And here yeah, they've gotten us to do. Care about characters they introduced in this movie. Well, and we're already yeah. on board, right?
So here's the point that I was trying to, that I was hinting at earlier is, yeah. So what this movie does is it keeps doing stupid things.
Okay.
So like, again, Noah has the glove that for some reason he just knows how to use all of a sudden.
Yeah,
like,
right.
So
right,
it's
right.
like, oh, hold on. And so it would keep taking me out every now and then, or the part at the very beginning where Noah has to leave and it's like, he's not going to have a conversation with his mom. Like that kind of took me, or you have like the National Treasure stuff where they just turn the little circles. And I'm like, so you're telling me that these things have been around for 1,000 years and nobody has thought of that. You're the first person to think of that, which reminded me of like the second National Treasure where they're up on Mount Rushmore and they're trying to figure something out. Right. And they're like, well, what if we pour this water bottle on this one part and it clears? And I'm like, so does it not rain up in Mount Rushmore? Like what's happening? So it's that, that kind of thing. And so the yeah. part where Mirage can, I need you to take the wheel, and he has like, he again, to bring it into something we're going to talk about in a little bit with his G.I. Joe, like the first G.I. Joe movie, Rise of Cobra, where they're the Wayans character and the Tatum character are wearing,
or whatever.
Yeah, the exosuits. That's what that reminded me of. When he gets that suit, I was like, come on, like what's happening? Like really, we're going to do this? But I like, and again, I like, there's no way that little Noah in that exosuit is going to be able to fight this, you know, scores that destroy giant
robots. You don't remember when Spike and Daniel got exosuits?
That's right. And they transform, right?
What a great callback to...
That's tying it in, right.
Well, I wish... Why did they not make Noah... Yeah, but my nickname is Spike or something.
Spike,
why
something
did
like
they
that.
Not... They pulled in so much good. I mean, maybe that would have felt like a hammer over the head. But I feel like if you gave him a nickname... I mean, they did it and Nolan did it. Well, my nickname's Robin, right?
So, but again, it's cool, though, that... it's dumb. Like, that moment was stupid. Like, I turned to my wife and was like, this is stupid. But what's cool about it is the idea that it's humans and Trent and Autobots fighting side by side. Like, there's the part where Optimus goes... You and me, we've been self-serving this whole time. We've been trying to serve our own points. We need to work together to serve a common point. And that's what they're doing. So I like the idea that they're fighting together. And again, what's awesome is even though the stupid stuff was happening, when Optimus is sacrificing himself, but no, all of a sudden Noah comes and saves and says, no, at whatever cost. Like,
at whatever
and he
cost,
pulls him back. And then
no,
just
it's
when
all
you think,
for one, right? That's Optimus' famous line.
I think, isn't it Primal that says that?
No, they say all for one. They say that it's the Prime line, yeah.
Because I know that Primal, and then when Primal comes in, he's the one that comes and says something.
I thought he says the same thing. I thought he copied Optimus and says all for one.
He says, like, until all are one, and pulls
him.
Yeah, that's... And then all of a sudden, like we did the unicorn stuff, you have this the Jablonski theme from the first Transformers movie that comes in, and... That part sold me. I was like, "Yeah, okay, great, way to bring me back." And they're doing this thing where they're all working together.
Dude,
they're all
that
driving
got me.
Away
from that got me emotional. Seriously, when it looked like Optimus Prime was going to sacrifice himself as he always does, he tells Primal, and he goes, "Your sacrifice will be our." motivation, our God, our commitment. What does he say? It's such a good line.
Your credo, basically.
Yep. So Optimus Prime says, "I'm gonna blow up the key and sacrifice myself." And Optimus Prime looks at him and goes, "Your sacrifice will be our creed, or will be our whatever." You know, insert line here. It was really, really touching. And then you see that because these characters have come to care about each other in just the short time frame of a couple hours that we've gotten to know these characters, we see how tight of a unit they've become. And just when Optimus Prime is about to be sucked into the Unicron thing, you see Noah's hand come out and he's like, "I'm not gonna," you know, and does the "all until all are one." And then he's about to get sucked up. He can't do it. He's using his jetpacks on his feet, and Optimus Primal comes and grabs him. And that is an emotional moment.
It's the three factions coming together and working as a team.
Till all are one, right?
I love that. Good.
Which is kind of the main plot of the show. Mm-hmm. It's always, you know, it's working together. It's everybody working together. So all of our heroes get away. Omnicron is, I will say the fight with Scourge. Sorry, Unicron.
Omicron is different.
Omicron is different. Yeah,
I think Darren called him Unicorn earlier. So
Unicorn, whatever. Yeah. As long as you get the Unicron. Like,
I think the fight with Scourge is really good. Everybody, but they close
Prime
up the portal.
Scourge.
Yeah,
and that's when he
tears his face off and then puts him into the lava. The beam, that was pretty great. So everybody kind of goes on their separate ways. Elena, we see her, like you said, you see her on 60 Minutes explaining what she found in Peru. We've got Noah going on an interview
with Leslie Stahl.
Is that so?
She's
like
getting interviewed by Leslie Stahl.
On 60 Minutes.
See, there's the. I have problems with that.
What's that?
When real quote unquote journalists play themselves in movies.
Why?
Like it to me, it completely negates them as like
what?
It drives me crazy.
Like when Anderson Wolf Cooper, Blitzer. Wolf Blitzer. You don't like that?
I hate it.
I think it makes it feel more real because when I go and I see this is the Acorn News Network and John Smithton, it's like, what the heck is that? That's a fake news thing. Like when they pull in Wolf Blitzer in the Avengers movies, I go like, I know that. Like I don't know. To me, it makes.
Well,
it
I
cool.
like when they did it in Mission Impossible. They brought Wolf
Mission.
Blitzer.
Oh, that was great with the mask.
That was
off,
pretty
yeah.
good. Yeah, it's pretty good.
But no, for the 60 minutes, like I just thought they used archival footage and then kind of matched it with Elena's character. So I don't know if that's actually her. But
I hope she got that paycheck, Leslie Stahl. Make that money
for her use, her visage on screen. Yeah.
So Noah goes and sees a guy about a job. And
this, okay, can I tell you right now, I caught no wind of this.
I had no idea.
Well, I knew because some of the Twitter people were saying, you won't believe like that final thing really hooks you in, right?
I will say, okay, I caught wind that there was something they were teasing, but that's it. So I'm like, they could tease anything. Are they going to tease
Megatron?
John Cena's back or Megatron? You know, I was thinking they're going to tease a character we know is like, oh my God, but I had no idea this was coming.
So well, this character...
Yeah, go ahead. You're
so this Noah's doing the interview and the guy who I always think of him as like the from Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
Like the jock alpha male.
Because that is him, Michael Kelly, right?
Is him. Yeah. Yeah, right. And he basically says, your resume is a little thin. He's like, I've been out of the country doing contract work. And he's like, I know, in Peru with your buddies.
This is where
guys.
I started losing my mind.
And I was
I
just like,
losing my mind at this
I'm like, all right, it's, you know, it's whatever. It's
I thought he was bad. I thought he was going to screw him over at first.
No, I just thought he was a government agent who's like, hey, you're really good at this. You've got a connection with them. We want to work with them.
Well, my first thought was like, S.H.I.E.L.D.?
kind of
holy crap.
So basically Noah's like, I don't really know what's going on, I don't want to do this, and he slides a card across the table and we don't see the card initially,
and he says well, we're going to take care of your brother,
but what he says is we're part of a covert team, and in the theater out loud I went, oh no, like
he said it and it didn't even click. Like that the property is so dead at this point.
I've never
like,
seen one of those movies. Never seen one.
I don't know if you're missing anything.
I didn't even see the new one with the
one with The Rock is okay in it because it's more practical and not special effects. But they're not.
But what is it? We didn't even say it.
So he opens this. You know, he pushes a button on a wall and it opens up into this giant hangar and there's a ship there.
And I guess if you know that ship is something that you might.
It's not.
Yeah,
that ship is nothing.
Okay.
Like there's a helicarrier. That's true.
Oh, you said it.
I guess I spoiled it. So anyway,
there's
Noah
a chicken noise helicarrier.
Yeah. He looks at the card, and of course, as soon as I see the symbol, And I remember saying in the theater out loud, "You got to be kidding
me." I think my soul left my body for a moment. I just could not. I have no attachment. Didn't see any of the movies, but I was just like, "This is insane."
You see the G.I. Joe logo, like the name G.I. Joe.
I just got to tell you, I loved it. I love that. It gets me giddy just thinking about it.
I could not believe that I didn't put it together faster.
Yeah.
That this guy is
what other property does Paramount own? And it's Hasbro. So it's
that's my thing, though, is like I completely forgot that Paramount owned G.I. Joe.
What'd you want him to say? Connect Four, the movie, Joe?
But it's like, of course it's G.I. Joe and a Transformers crossover.
Oh, my gosh. Can you imagine The Rock? I mean, you've already got Cena.
No, those guys are gone. If they're going to reboot Transformers, they're going to reboot those.
But I'm just saying, you bring him in, dude, who knows? But it's a reboot, right? So you can do whatever you want. Let's say they bring in the biggest action stars to play G.I. Joe guys.
It's the Expendables.
And team them up with Transformers. Like, again, not knowing those movies, the newer movies, not having any huge love for the series and stuff. Like,
oh, man, that series and those action figures. I will say, though,
they can start fresh, right? Just like they did with Bumblebee. Yeah, they can start
all over.
Get Sergeant Slaughter while you still can. Didn't he do the PSAs in the cartoon?
He did.
He was in the cartoon.
So,
he was a character in the cartoon.
Yeah, Sergeant Slaughter's still around.
Is he? Mm-hmm.
We just lost Sheik.
Sheik, baby.
But get Sergeant Slaughter, man, for that cameo, for whatever you're doing, at least.
It's crazy that they never did that.
Yeah.
You know, like
those other movies, how they not get Slaughter, yeah.
Well, not even that. Like, how did they not put these two together?
Because
they were both of them were making movies at the same time. Like, when was that first G.I. Joe?
Joe, because it sounds ridiculous, but at this point,
I guess that's true.
It sounds ridiculous, but
in 2023, we're just like, what are you dumb? Why would you do that?
But right, that's what I mean. On paper, 10 years ago, you would have said, "Give me a break." But now it's all about crossovers and shared universes and expanded universes. And I mean, if they do it right, if they make a good movie,
there's a G.I. Joe animated movie.
I don't know what it was. Like, I agree with you, Kevin, that it's really stupid. Like, you're like, what? Like, but when it happens in the movie, I was like, that's, I don't know. It's like my lizard brain kicked in.
I think
that's cool. That's neat. That's a cool idea. Like,
up
why
this
not?
Entire movie where this movie did all the right things. It set out to do, I think, exactly what it wanted to accomplish. And every time I saw them transform, big action scene, car chase, punching robots, whatever, I lit up. This movie, it did the dumb stuff, quote unquote, in a way to where it wasn't so dumb that it's bad. It just checked all the boxes for me. And like you, again, even without having the love for G.I. Joe properties, I'm like, game on, let's do it if it's this good.
Yeah,
why not? That's the difference. Like, it does have the really stupid stuff. Like, it's got some real that. My brain checked out, right? But unlike Age of Extinction, which is nonstop, just nonsense. Mm. And again, my brain fought me the whole time. I was like, what? And so at the end, when Optimus Prime literally has a line on top of everything else that happened to him, he's like, he flies into space or something. And he goes, "When you look to the stars, think of one of them as my soul." And I'm like, are you me? Like, am I being trolled? Like, you know what I'm like? Are you kidding? The whole Age of Extinction is just all stupid. There's no sincerity. It's all stupid. It's all nonsensical stuff. This one has that in it, but it also has that heartfelt sincerity in those moments that work.
That's
you know what I mean? And so even though it has that stupid, awesome stuff, you know, you're right, Kevin. It's what you expect from a Transformers movie. I just think it sells both of those things well, even though they don't always mesh.
Precisely.
Bingo. You know,
so that's the thing.
Way to sum it up.
There it is. Guys, I had a blast with it. I loved it. I saw it on the big show
at Alamo.
Huge screen, big sound. You know, see this in a good theater with a huge screen and good sound, and you'll have a blast with it. It made me feel like a kid again watching Transformers. And if they keep making them like this, I think I just felt such a like it was making good for the crap that Michael Bay did, right? Like, Michael Bay took this property and turned it into so stupid and all the things we don't have to rehash, but we got it during the episode. And, you know, took these beloved characters and dumbed them down in a way where it really felt crappy. And Bumblebee and this have restored my faith that they can take movies that are about a toy line and actually give them some heart and write them in a way where you care about the characters and care about what happens to them. And
give me that Master of the Universe movie, baby.
They do it right.
Well, let me just tie something back in, and then I want to ask you a question. But, like, you know, watching this, just trying to, like I said, I introduced my eldest son in the Transformers episode we did for Nostalgia Cast. And this one, it was he just turned 14 yesterday, but it's our second youngest son.
Happy birthday.
He's been talking about, thank you. I'll tell him, I'll pass that on. But he's been talking at Bumblebee and how much he liked that. And he's seen the commercials for this and he thought it was, I want to go see it. So we took him yesterday to a matinee and he was really getting into it. Like, especially when Bumblebee comes back and turns the tide. I thought that was cool.
It was a cool scene. We should mention Bumblebee comes back because the Energon cubes are,
right.
When Unicron does the thing, like it gives the energy burst and he can come back. And he comes in and this hero scene fighting.
He does it to what song? What song does he do?
Oh, which one was it? I can't remember.
Sabotage?
No, it's I'm going to knock you out. It's
I thought
that was really cool.
The soundtrack, the 90s soundtrack's really good in this. But he comes in and he's fighting what's the bad one that you mentioned earlier? The female.
Nightbird. Yeah.
Nightbird. And they have a great action scene and he demolishes her, just fighting in the air and destroys her.
Well, he makes Scourge do it.
He turns her around. Yeah.
So that's cool. Yeah. I expected there to be the female like RC killing or something. That was interesting. But yeah, so again, it was really, for me, it was heartwarming just bringing our kid there and sharing that with him. And so I thought that was kind of a passing it on. But my question for Joe is like, it sounds like you enjoyed this better than you said you did.
So I did. Like, I agree almost 100% with what you're saying. Is like, it's big, it's dumb. There were definitely parts where I was like, God, can we just keep moving? But those moments do get overshadowed by, you know, seeing them transform or seeing Bumblebee come back. Or
the camaraderie between the humans and the Autobots.
I do 100% agree, though, that these movies are so much better than the Bay stuff because the writers and directors have taken time to build characters rather than just throw robots through buildings.
Mm-hmm.
So when our Autobots or Maximals or whoever are fighting, you actually give a shit about what's going to happen to those characters rather than, like, you know, when, I don't know,
they didn't crash into a Bud Light truck and then drink the Bud Light.
Any of the Autobots of the Autobots in those other movies, like, you just didn't care. With the exception of Optimus Prime and Bumblebee, you didn't give a shit. Where in this one, I was like, I would kind of like everybody to live, please.
Joe's like, I would die for Mirage.
Not Mirage.
Hey, no one threw dust in Mirage's face in this movie.
That's true.
Well, did you see Fast X, Darren?
No.
Oh. Well,
I'm notorious. I haven't seen a single Fast and the Furious movie. I own Fast 5 because I heard great things about it.
Yes, Fast 5
is really good.
But I haven't had the time to sit. And every time another one comes out, I'm like, yeah, that could be good. And then people are like, this is shit. So I'm like, never mind.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I like the first one because it's Point Break, and then Fast 5, Fast 6, maybe Fast 7, and then they turn from espionage into superheroes, and they think they're superheroes, and it just doesn't work for me, at least.
But
sometimes they'd be good, sometimes maybe...
Yeah, you don't know. But it depends on the director, maybe, for those.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, it's not just the sincerity. They're also sidestepping all the racist, misogynist that Michael Bay had. That Romeo and Juliet thing, I think that's the most irresponsible thing I've ever seen.
Yep. It's crazy in a mainstream movie.
Aimed at 14-year-old kids. Right?
Tell people this is okay. Yeah.
Don't do this. I was so offended. I was like, what is this movie?
Yeah.
Why am I here?
It's crazy that got put into a movie.
Bumblebee and Rise of the Beast, it doesn't have any of that stuff. That's what I mostly enjoyed, when it didn't have anything. There were dumb parts, but it was never like, this is offending me to my core. Like, it wasn't, it didn't have anything like that. So
no,
I,
well,
man,
absolutely not.
I appreciate that.
Let's give credit to the writers by name. We've talked about them. We've sung their praises the whole episode. Joby Harold, Darnell Mader, and Josh Peters wrote the film, again, directed by Stephen Caple Jr., who has now proven he's more than capable himself.
We're going to see that guy in a Marvel movie. You watch.
Yeah. Creed 2 is fantastic. And then this movie, this is kind of cool. I didn't realize he directed an episode of Transformers Earthspark, which is one of the newer 2022 animated series.
I think it's the Netflix one.
Nickelodeon, actually.
Oh.
It's an N-word.
Yeah. Hey, now, be careful. Netflix did like kind of an anime Transformers, and this CG-ish newer one. But yeah, he directed an episode of that, so I guess maybe that was a testing of the waters. I haven't seen that one, but
we talked about the Moneyball aspect of what the MCU did, and I'm wondering if James Gunn, this is just spitballing, is going to do the same thing when he's going to Moneyball the DC stuff. When we've already heard that Andy Muschietti is probably going to direct the new Batman movie.
Like Brave and the Bold is the rumor.
Bold, yeah. So I just wonder if, like, you know, James Gunn is going to look at these guys coming up through the ranks of, like, these Transformer stuff or whatever, and be like, we'll take you for Swamp Thing, which is James Mangold. Like, that's what that is.
Yeah. But the difference is James Gunn will let those directors have personality.
Correct.
I don't think he will treat them as cattle. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think that's the difference.
Agreed.
Yeah. There you go.
It was good. All right. Well, that's it for this week's
episode.
Bye.
Oh, wait. This is
no, we don't do that here. So anyway, thanks for listening. Rate and review us. Do all that stuff. Joe, tell the folks where to find you.
You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21. Also on Letterboxd. If you go through my Letterboxd for this year, under each movie, if we've done an episode of it, no matter if it's an old movie or not, there is a link in the show notes for
Look
each one
you,
of those.
Mr. Fancy Pants.
Has a plug to each one of our episodes for that said for said movie.
Hello, so Mr. Fancy Pants. All right. speaking of fancy pants, the fanciest of the fanciest, Darren, thank you for joining us. It was a blast talking to you as always,
man.
And give us some plugs.
Okay, again, my podcast that I do with my best friend, Johnny, childhood friend, NostalgiaCast. You can find me on Twitter at DW Lemberg. We've got a YouTube channel. Again, just find NostalgiaCast. On my profile and on Twitter, you can go and click on the link tree, and you'll see all the podcatchers, and YouTube is there. We're just finishing up recording our 90s Palooza season, where we just focus on 90s movies that we honed our movie chops on and became huge fans of movies from that decade. So we've been having a lot of fun there. So go ahead and check us out. YouTube, if you want to look at my face some more, I don't know why you would. But or you can just listen to a podcast. Yeah, this is, guys, Joe, this is our first time actually chatting.
It is. We've gone back and forth a lot.
We have. Yes. And so, again, it's just like we're friends.
Absolutely.
Lifelong friends. Same thing with Kevin. It's like,
there you go.
You guys are my podcasting brothers. And
thanks, man.
746
awesome.
Episodes. Good job, you guys.
Oh,
keep,
man,
I know you'll keep going. So
10 awesome. Years next week. So,
yeah,
whoa,
the,
awesome.
The stay tuned. Stay tuned next week.
I will write that review. just
you know what? Your review may be read on our 10-year anniversary episode.
Oh,
you
my
gotta
gosh.
Get it in, buddy.
Okay,
so,
I will do that.
To touch on the 10-year anniversary, we might have something in the works for... This is the hint. How about this? Our first episode was the beginning of the DCU, right?
Mm-hmm.
Our 10-year anniversary is the end of the DCU.
Oh.
See what that means.
See what that means.
So anyway, you can follow me on Twitter. This is Kevin at Kevin R. Brackett. And follow us on social media. Definitely follow Darren, follow Joe, myself, Tom. Get all our tweets about random movie stuff, and we post all our episodes there. So if you're looking for a place to either find the latest episode or do the share, so you're part of the show shares, follow us on social media. But that's it for now. And until next time, you've been warned.
Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, 'cause we already warned you.